It pop up there. Okay, we are recording. So welcome, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us. And you can go ahead and share who you are and why you're here. And, you know, feel free to talk about whatever topics of interest to you. And we have a lot of people here, both faculty and students, by the way, that will be interested in everything you have to share.
Same. Thanks for having me, Tina. I contemplated bringing the slide, but I thought it'd be easier just to talk it through. And if my dog starts barking, she picked this opportune moment at the beginning of your recording to be barking. So I apologize for that ahead of time. So my name is Tom Gorup. I'm Vice President of Security Operations at Alert Logic. It's my title today. I come from probably a little bit more of a unique background when it comes to cybersecurity from an IT perspective. 2006-ish, 2005, I joined the Army as an infantryman. So I served for 6 years in Iraq and Afghanistan. I was selected for Special Forces in 2007 after Iraq, spent some time there, and then went to 101st Airborne, went to Afghanistan there, Purple Heart and some other stuff. There's a documentary about my unit's time in Afghanistan. It's called No Greater Love. So it's a well put together. If I were to had made that video or film, you'd need Ritalin just to keep up. That'd be all over the place. The way our chaplain tells the story, it's very smooth. It's amazing how well he was able to do that. But, you know, ever since I was probably 13, 14, I've always been into, or 12 maybe, into technology. I think I built my first website when I was 13-ish, you know, back in the AOL days. Gaming really got me into it, right? StarCraft, Diablo, all that, those great classics is what really got me into technology. And, you know, I usually joke that somewhere around high school, I found girls and lost that passion in technology and kind of drifted a different direction, but it's always been there for forever. And as I was getting out of the Army, I was thinking like, okay, what am I going to do? In what direction am I going? Now is the time to make that decision. I remember being in Afghanistan, thinking IT, that's the direction I want to go. So I picked up a CCNA study guide. I don't know if you've seen this, Todd Lanley, CCNA study, super thick. And I'm, you know, in the middle of nowhere, effectively, in Afghanistan. There's no routers or switches I can play with. All I have is my bunk and the book. And I remember reading it over and over again, the first 3 or 4 chapters, because I didn't get a word of it, didn't understand any of it, had no lab to really play with it. But I just, you know, that drive, that interest and intrigue, it always fascinated me that I could talk to someone on the other side of the globe in milliseconds, just have that conversation at light speed. So how that worked was fascinating. And then I finally got to the security section of that the study guide. And I was like, okay, this makes sense. This clicks, right? I can take, instead of securing forward operating bases and, hasty battle positions, I can secure computer networks. The only difference was I wasn't using machine guns and claymores anymore. I'm using antivirus and firewalls, IPSs. And so I just had to learn the technology. The tactics, techniques, and procedures were all there. The TTPs were there. Just now, how do I translate those? So that's what I spent the next probably a few years doing, is working on that translation. I went to Hopkinsville Community College out in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is where I was stationed over at the 101st Airborne at Fort Campbell. So started going to school there, and then was looking for opportunities for internships, looking everywhere I could, and finally got linked up with a guy, JJ Thompson. You might be familiar, especially in, you know, Indianapolis, Indiana area. He had started a company called Rook Consulting at the time, and he was looking for some people in his SOC. But the SOC was effectively a 2-man, 3-man team. And I was looking for an internship, and he ended up hiring me full time. So we moved from Tennessee to Indiana. You know, kind of, I guess you'd say it was a bit risky, right? I just had a newborn, opportunity with a startup, small security operations, just taking that opportunity as soon as it sat in front of me, that was the biggest thing. And I think I was listening to some previous podcasts, and it was people in cybersecurity, it's often experience. How do you get experience if you don't have experience, right? Like, but everybody's looking for experience. And that's kind of where I was at, back in like 2010, 2011. But from there, I was really able to take what I learned in the military, both from a leadership standpoint and also from a tactics perspective, and start applying it, in a more practical sense with our security operations center. So I think it was about 5 or 6 years. During that time, I architected and developed a few applications. We have a tool I called the Grunt. It was a SOAR solution, security automation and orchestration and response. I think at the time they might have called it SOAP, Gardner did, but switched to SOAR here recently, which was a lot of fun. Also, architect and developed our Force platform, which was call it a case management ticketing system for security. How can we take in alerts, correlate that data, and update cases within real time, and enrich that with other data sets was the vision there, and do that in real time using stream processing and great tools like Apache Storm and all this pretty, it's a bleeding edge stuff at the time. Now you have even more advanced things through Lambda functions and other type of cloud stream processing type engines. But at the time, building some great stuff there, along with building up the security operations center. We were growing customers, we were bringing in more analysts. It was a whole lot of fun. And then through that process, as you probably know, Rook Security got acquired by Sophos, and I ended up coming over here to AlertLogic, and I've been running the AlertLogic SOC for the last 3 years or so, plus or minus. The time flies, moves pretty quickly. One of the biggest things through the course of all of this, one of the things that's kind of stuck with me the most, I feel is most important, is leadership. And leadership in a more applied sense, that not like leadership in the cybersecurity industry or management of people. It's more of, how do we lead together side by side to do something greater than, any one individual could accomplish. What I've found over the years is, and this is a good quote, I think John Maxwell, it's from him, one is too small of a number to achieve anything great. What I've found is that, being surrounded by amazing people is what allows groups of people to do amazing things. It's no individual that can make amazing things happen. It's how does a group of people work well together? So leadership in a sense that it's not just one person even leading that, it's the group leading each other, holding each other accountable, driving for greater things. That's pretty much the recent history in a as much of a nutshell as possible. Is there anything specific? I mean, I could probably talk a lot about a lot of different things, a lot of different topics, but anything in particular anybody was interested in?
I'll pause for a minute for students to ask. Just to give you an idea of the audience, we do have some faculty here, but we have a mix of students, both from cybersecurity, both grad and undergrad. One of the things that we talk about a lot is certifications, because our programs do align with certifications. So I don't know if that's something you want to talk about. But the other idea is it would be internships, because I know a lot of our students are looking to get into the field. They may be in an IT role and want a cyber role or cloud. So some thoughts on kind of secret sauce on how to get into the industry. And there's Ted's question just came up too.
Yeah.
What was your path when it comes to education and certifications, and whether or not that's really, you know, kind of the only way to go, or is there alternatives?
Yeah, I would always say, you know, college is important. I think your education is extremely valuable, but it only brushes the surface. You can't expect to get the depth that you need to get in a particular area through school alone. School is a great opportunity to give you a taste of what that thing might be, and it's on you to decide whether that's the direction you want to go and the depth you want to go with it. Now, I've seen a lot of students coming out of school with varying degrees of depth and, you know, varying levels of experience when it comes to like internship opportunities as well. Experience, I believe, will always trump a lot of that. You know, the more experience you can get, the better. But the education is a great way to get a taste of different parts. I mean, especially security, it's such a broad topic and can touch many facets of the business, to IT, to HR. You know, like how are we managing all this together? Like, it's very complex. So getting that opportunity to explore those different things in an education environment is great. Me personally, my path, you know, I mentioned I went to Hopkinsville Community College. I have an associate's degree in applied science with a focus on IT security. I probably might have been the first one there to graduate with an IT security degree. There's a lot of CBT that they had applied. I'm trying to remember the what they were using at the time. But through that process, I got my A+ certification, or at least the first half of it. Then I got my Network Plus and then Security Plus. From there, I got my GCIA, which was definitely probably the best certification that I had experience with. And then I've just read as much as humanly possible, right? Sans Reading Room has been an amazing resource to learn on various topics that you need to get the depth into. And a lot of late nights. I can say when I first started transitioning out of the military, going to school, I was staying up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning, just figuring it out. How do I do this thing? Playing with Metasploit and Metasploitable and damn vulnerable VM, I think it was called, or web app. Ooh, it's been a long time. But what fascinated me was not only the exploitation of these things, but how it worked. Like, what was it that actually, like, how did this remote code execution work? Why was I able to do that? And just exploring those things, staying up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning, trying to figure out how that worked. That's kind of the same path with, I got into Python. I went to school, did C++, loved C++. It was great, but to do anything, it took a long time to accomplish that, right? Like, if I needed to do something simple as like parse out all the IP addresses from a CSV, that's a lot of work in C++. So I found Bash. Bash was great. I was able to use command line tools, tie it all together, and you know what I've learned from Linux and just digging into that. Now I can make, just script everything out. Well, I remember working at Forensic Investigation at Rook and using Bash to pour through the data to find social security numbers and the like. And this was, you know, pretty early days on that kind of stuff. And so I was going through every time, about 45 minutes in, my program would crash. Every time. And I'm like, it's taking so long for it to crash too. So it's like this wait, crash. And then you try to debug. And at the time we were looking to stand up a dev team, and Michael Taylor, who was one of our, it was our first dev, came in and he knew Python. And it's like, okay, I got a challenge. This is what I'm trying to do. He wrote it in like 15 minutes and it executed in like 30 minutes, 20 minutes. So not only did he do it faster, but it ran faster and it didn't crash. From there, I'm learning Python. There was no turning back. And that's, you know, a lot of the tools that we built in the SOC were built on Python because we were able to accomplish. So my learning path has been all over the place from, you know, some standard education, certifications, and then just exploration. Curiosity, I think, goes a long way in the IT industry, and it, you know, goes a long way in the security industry. I don't know if I answered any of these questions here.
Yeah, no, and I just wanted to chime in and say that, you know, we added Python, a year ago maybe now, to our cyber degree for the same reason you mentioned, that you suddenly got to a point where you just needed a little script, and it was not that easy to write a little script if you don't know some kind of programming language. And I'm glad to hear that you endorse Python is the choice for cyber folks, because that's what we decided on. But just to kind of parlay off of that, one of the reasons that we discovered the shortage, I guess, in those skill sets was the competitions that we do. And I don't know if you're familiar with NCL, you know, the National Cyber League, which is capture the flag kind of stuff. And we also do like CCDC, but there's other challenges that we're starting to look into. And, you know, they definitely have a wider breadth, I guess, of subjects. Not just security, you know, programming and, you know, artificial intelligence and, you know, OSINT, everything else. I mean, there's so many different things that kind of go into cybersecurity. And so just my summary of what you said and what I always say is that you have to be immersed. You just absolutely have to be immersed in all of this, because it's more than a notion. It's not something you just pick up, you know, it's something you have to really, you know, dedicate your life to, like you have. So I appreciate you sharing that.
It's true. The immersion is a good way to express that. The depth of any one of these topics, I mean, you can get lost in it. You can have a lot of fun in it. But I think getting lost in it is a big problem. I remember just getting started in security. I'm like, I didn't know where to go. This was like 2010, 2011. And it was, there's some resources out there, but they, you know, it wasn't as vast, I think, as it is today. And in today, I think it would even be more difficult. Where do I start? There's so much available information, it's almost overwhelming. And I think that's where school plays a, you know, colleges play a great role in helping to like focus that energy into a direction. Whereas, you know, there weren't very many cybersecurity degrees in 2010, 2011. I went to ITT Tech first, and I realized that was a horrible mistake. And that's when I moved over to Hopkinsville, you know, community college, you know, more proper education system. But there just wasn't much there. And, you know, Ted, to answer your question, going from like infantry to architecting applications, I don't know how it happened either, man. You know, it was just a lot of, you know, heads down and learning. Critical thinking, I agree, is a big part of that. It's all logical for the most part. You know, it's logical. So if you can apply that logic and map it out, you know, again, you might stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning figuring it out. But, that reward on the other side is pretty significant. I always enjoyed it.
Do you think it was because of how much JJ demanded of us that we just had to figure it out to get to where we needed to be?
So for me, that was so here, when I think about like leadership, this has come to mind, I can't count how many times. When I first took on the team at Rook, it was probably about four of us, three and an intern, effectively. I remember my wife telling me, she's like, Tom, you can't talk to people that way. Like, yes, I can. I do it every day. It was just the military side. I was a squad leader in the infantry. So you could imagine our tone was kind of no nonsense in a way, right? It was very matter of fact. Feelings weren't something that we took in consideration. It was, there's an objective. There is no, that's impossible, or there's no way to do it, or it's too hard. That's not in our vocabulary in the infantry. So to your point, Dean, like, I saw it the same way. When we saw a problem, it wasn't looking at that problem as it was insurmountable. It was more of, how do we get on the other side? There was no bowing down. There was no quitting. There was no, it's too hard. You know, it, in some sense, it was recognizing that you may not be able to do 100% of what you're trying to do here, but that shouldn't hold you back from trying to achieve 80% of that. So, you know, part of it is instilling that confidence. To your point, Dan, was like, you know, JJ had a way of saying, like, this is possible, figure it out. And that's enough confidence for me to say, okay, he thinks it's possible. I'll figure it out. If it's possible, we'll figure it out. And 9 times out of 10, we did.
That's really cool, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, like you said, it's probably rewarding, you know, to eventually come to those conclusions after such a long time of trying to figure out something. So I'm sure that's what motivates a lot of people to be here, though. The IT industry in general, but cyber in particular, is just, you know, the next new challenge around the corner that none of us anticipated. And it'll be in the news tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
And then we all have to figure out how to solve that. So.
And it's still in its infancy, too. You know, there's so exactly. much we don't understand. I mean, if you think about the tools that we have, you know, I was kind of having this conversation the other day, is how novel is anything that we really have today from a tooling perspective? We have intrusion detection systems that are signature-based. We have SIMs that are signature-based. We're looking at different forms of machine learning and artificial intelligence that's just in its infancy. Like, we're really not accomplishing much than like identifying outliers within a bunch. We're not doing actual like true futuristic machine learning or anything, accomplishing anything amazing from that front. I mean, it's cool stuff, don't get me wrong. It's bleeding edge, but it's not, I don't believe we've like crossed some sort of chasm where we've solved the security problem yet in such a way. We've created a standardized way of approaching security. You collect this data, you analyze this data in this way, you look for anomalies and patterns amongst this data set. But you know, we have vulnerability scanning. There's whole processes and approaches to solving this, but it's not like, hey, boom, this is how you solve for security. Each business is different on top of that. You're talking about from healthcare to retail to, you know, government, banking, finance, you know, each industry has its different approach, different things that they're worried about. Some are more concerned, when you think about the CIA triad, they're more concerned about availability than they are integrity and confidentiality. And then you have the other end of the spectrum that they're concerned about that confidentiality and integrity over availability. They'd rather the machine go down than anybody gain access to it. Each has its own challenges, and I think that's what makes it interesting as well. So let's look at Ted's, how do we get around some of the companies doing unicorn hiring with the auto HR? It's sad. You know, it's tough though too. You know, I've done a lot of hiring of interns. I'm sure Dean has seen that firsthand. I think you mentioned it above. Dean, we did have quite a few interns that, you know, some, at least 3 or 4 that were interns are still, they're working at Sophos now, doing some amazing work there, which is so exciting to see. But it's hard because of the scalability aspect of that is, how do I take all these resumes and identify those that actually have the drive to want to do this? I've done hundreds of interviews. I had this challenge, and I don't have a really good way to draw it up here, but it was, I don't want to call it a riddle. It was a challenge. And I never expected anybody to solve it. As a matter of fact, I think only one candidate solved it. I obviously hired him, and he's over at Sophos now doing great stuff. But it was more about watching the way the person would approach the problem. How would they break it down? You know, what was their reaction? You know, I had one person tell me they would get back to me. Well, they never got back to me. So I'm not going to hire you. Even if you came back to me and said, hey, I tried and I can't figure it out, how do you do it, Tom? That would have been good enough for me to say, come on, you know, you're hired. Because at that point, that candidate had done pretty well. Didn't know there's a lot to learn, but overall approach was good, but they never got back to me. There's no follow through there. I had another candidate that looked at the problem about 10 seconds in before this. So we were going back and forth on, networking, talking about TCP. This candidate went deeper than anyone else I had spoken to with TCP. It almost met me at my depth of TCP. I was impressed. I'm like, all right, looking good. Put the challenge in front of the candidate and looked at about 10 seconds, looked up and said, it's impossible. Given the benefit of the doubt, we just had a great conversation. No, it's not impossible. It's very possible. I wouldn't give you an impossible problem here. Looks at it probably another 30 seconds. It's impossible. Well, this was a really good conversation. That's all it was. I want someone that's going to solve problems, that's going to do everything they can, work it out, talk it out, ask questions, whatever it takes to try to get to the answer, not look at it and that's impossible. So how do you scale that, Ted? And that's the problem HR, that's the problem that they have, is that they're getting a lot of candidates, a lot of opportunities, but not everyone can you screen like that. I had that luxury for a while, and over time that just gets difficult to scale. So at that point it's relationship building. How do I create relationships with people that are in industry and have those types of conversations where when an opportunity, right now, we're hiring at Alert Logic and we incentivize our employees to bring in referrals, right? Why not get paid to find your next coworker? If you have a relationship with one of our analysts, that's an opportunity for, a sideway in, because to your point, some of those recruiters are getting hundreds of applications at a time and somehow they have to narrow that down. That's where relationships, can go a long way. I know the last year has been pretty tough on that with COVID and all the cons kind of shutting down, but hopefully that'll pick back up here in the next year and we'll get more opportunities.
So on that note, has your company gone remote mostly or no?
Yeah, it's been pretty fascinating, and man, we have such an amazing team. We've been remote for just over a year now, pretty much just as COVID really started hitting with the West Coast and the East Coast, we decided to shut down the office because the risk was too high. I couldn't afford one person coming in sick and 70, 80 people get sick. We'll shut down operations. So it was better for us to be distributed and remote. So we went remote pretty much immediately and haven't looked back. The efficiency's been amazing. Our leaders have been spectacular. It's been awesome to watch and humbling. We're fully remote now.
That's great. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously I work remote, been doing that for over 10 years, and I can't imagine it any other way. And I think that's really appealing to a lot of people, obviously, and it just opens up so many more opportunities. We have a lot of students that are in, states that are not really, cybersecurity heavy, and yet they have the talents and the skills that are needed in those states. And it would just be awesome if all companies could, be open to the remote work that you're doing. And, one after another, we're proving it can happen. It can be effective, and, it really is a much more efficient way to do things.
Yeah.
Environmentally and otherwise, all these people driving back and forth in different directions. I just moved to the Southern California area, which is an insane place for traffic. And it's just ridiculous to watch.
Yeah.
All the people going this way and all the people going this way. And it's like, why can't everybody just stay home? That's what I do.
It's true. I used to do, it was about a 40, 45 minute commute into Houston. And over the course of 2 years, that grew into an hour, just over an hour. And then it went away completely. I was like, oh man, I'm getting 2 hours back a day.
Yeah, two hours of productivity back to the company or your life. There's just no better way to look at it.
Yeah, okay. I can see. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to Ted posted some stuff, but go ahead.
it did take some getting used to. Me personally, I realized how much I feed off of interactions, face-to-face, physical interactions with people like that. I didn't realize how much that fed me. I think the first month I probably paced the first floor of my house 10,000 times, just not understand. Like, I had energy, but I felt depleted. It didn't, like, nothing made sense. And that's just the extrovert part of me, craving that interaction with another human that I didn't get. I've since coped, but it was a learning experience for me, for sure. So do companies come to you looking for a particular bit of the CIA triad needing to be looked for? So people come to Alert Logic for, and I don't think I've dug into this, managed detection response, MDR. So Rook Security was on the bleeding edge of MDR. MDR wasn't even a thing when Alert Logic was doing MDR, right? I think we were on Gartner's first white paper mentioning MDR. So definitely on the front end of that. Managed detection response is, you know, a more basic way of explaining it is more of a unified proprietary technology set to deliver security operations that's pseudo fully managed, right? We're not managing to hands on the keyboard to servers and applications, making code changes or firewall changes in that regard. Because there's obviously risk and understanding of the environment. That's important that somebody who understands that depth there can apply that context. But what we do offer is detection across a large scale, a large stream of data from if you're in the cloud and Azure or AWS, or if you're on-prem, the experience is the same there. So customers come to us really to be able to solve that detection and response capability at a grander scale where, you know, they're not able to hire in a 24/7 security operations center. They don't want to have to buy point solutions like an IDS and log collection, a SIM, write all the correlation, bring in their own third-party threat intelligence and try to make sense of all this stuff. They just want somebody to be able to solve for that. You know, I think Gartner's been saying that customers are trying to consolidate vendors from a security standpoint because there's so many point solutions out there. It's very difficult to manage and create value out of all those things. So, you know, that's what Alert Logic sets up to do is to make that simpler. So as far as the CIA triad goes, you know, our obvious availability is important to our customers. Confidentiality, integrity, they all have levels of value to the customer. Our objective is to make sure all those stay by providing that depth of visibility, mainly from a security perspective. So availability plays in the security when we think about vulnerability scanning. Two ends of that, right? Am I vulnerable to a denial of service attack? Or the other side, is my scan going to take down my machine? Onto integrity and confidentiality from monitoring, file integrity monitoring, things like that. So, they come to us for pretty wide reach when it comes to that piece of it. Hopefully I answered your question there. Certs, platform certs, those are all valuable. You know, a certification to me and a degree really validates that you're willing to see something through, which is a big piece of it. But you better be able to speak to it. And again, all the interviews, I've had people that put things on their resume, said they had experience, and once you ask them a question about it, they can't answer a very basic one. Or you know this question is on the test because you've taken it yourself, and they can't answer it. What we don't want is brain dump, right? You don't take a cert just to get the cert and then dump all the information, forget about it. Apply it, use it. Don't take a cert that's not useful. It's not valuable to you. And it'll just make you look bad on your resume when the time comes. So, or on the interview when the time comes. So it's best to just find your passion, head that direction, and everything else will fall in, you know, fall in line. So certs are good. Just make sure you're purposeful about them, I guess maybe is a good way to say that.
Yeah, I posted that question about the interns because I'm just wondering if you're open to like entry point people in some cases, or are there certain minimum levels that you have to start with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. With interns, it's managing to an outcome. It has to be a good fit on both sides. The intern has to be able to show passion in what you're trying to accomplish. And there's varying levels of internship, right? I think it was in Indiana that we could have unpaid internships, if I recall correctly, but the business could receive no value from that intern. In other words, we couldn't put an intern on a project that would bring monetary value to the company, whether that be proprietary or whatever. So we had to, you had to pay your interns for that, which is logical, makes sense. Each state is very different on those types of rules, so you have to kind of like read up on that, which makes this remote workforce kind of difficult too, because each state's different. You know, hiring out of California has completely different implications than hiring out of Texas, and different from Illinois and Indiana and Florida, New York, but from a, where an intern's at, I think it's good to have that base level knowledge. I always look for basic networking capabilities. I'm not expecting you to understand, BGP in depth, but you should be able to identify, an RFC 1918 IP address, or speak to some common port numbers, be able to understand, or have different depths on applications or logging, because the IT industry has such wide reach. What are we trying to accomplish right now? And making sure that intern has that, or what are we doing as a standard? Make sure the intern has that a decent level of depth that we can build off of. So usually, I think most interns we had juniors, seniors. I think he was a senior in high school one time. The kid was a rock star. I have to follow up, see what he's doing these days. But some depth, passion's a big part of it, though. If you want to be here, we can do great things. Just trying to check a box,
No, that's good advice. I mean, I agree. Me personally, if I'm going to hire somebody, part of it, a big part of it is that passion and that zest for life and the really want to be there and enthusiasm and energy. And those are things that you don't put on a resume, right? It's really one of those things that you get through a conversation at some point. So, but that's really good advice, because I think that's something else that our students can practice right now is interviewing. You really have to be good at interviewing to get your passion out there and get your personality out there to kind of differentiate yourself above and beyond certs and degrees. It's really about the person. So that's good advice. Good. I don't know. Do we have another question over here that we didn't get to there? I guess the other question is, now that you are virtual, the company is, are you guys finding that you do hire interns across the country? They don't have to be local to where the company is, and you're still kind of tending to think right that one to go back.
right now we're trying, internships remote is a little bit difficult. And we haven't really taken the opportunity to dig in what that would look like. We do plan on returning to office more from a hub perspective. Okay. Everybody's not going to be required to come in all the time, but there might be opportunities where we want to have team meetings or get togethers. I think physical presence is still important in that respect, but it won't be all the time.
Right.
When we have an office, internships become way more valuable. You're able to sit next to somebody, start working, somebody swing by and have that conversation. I think internships, we haven't really taken the time to think about like what would a remote internship look like. I find it a little bit more difficult. The internships that we've had have been successful. It's been because of that face-to-face interaction. And kind of like, hey, I have a problem. I need your help right now, or I need somebody's help. Doing it over Teams or you know Zoom or whatever we're using, it can get a little bit more disconnected.
But we, you know, we're the experts. We teach everything online. We have all of our labs online, and we actually have an internal internship program that's virtual. We've basically built a virtual company where we bring in students in the last term, or you know, at any point that they really want to get experience. And it's a challenge. It's an absolute challenge, as you mentioned, to try to gather everyone and to keep track of what's going on and all of that. But I'm really excited to see the rest of the world go virtual, though, to be honest. You know, we've been doing virtual for so long, it's not new. And it's kind of interesting to watch the rest of the world just have to embrace it and get used to the idea that pretty much anything can be done virtually, one way or the other.
Yeah. It's just taking the time to work towards it, for sure.
I mean, you know, we're all building different systems and ways of doing things because of that. I mean, whatever it may be, to be, because Carlos just asking the same question, you know, without the face-to-face, how do you train new employees, you know?
Yeah, and that's a good question. With that, we have a internal training team that really does an amazing job of putting together a curriculum, making sure that we have good content. But that was one thing we recognized almost very quickly, was a lot of our training was delivered in person. Bring people into a training room, to a conference room, and start digging into slideshow data, showing different incident response analysis scenarios. And like, okay, we can't do it that way anymore. And we could do it over virtual conferencing. And we did some of that for a while, but what we started to do is record those. And now able to break those out into a curriculum that's consumable through an internal CBT. So, which makes it also trackable, scalable. We don't have to try to manage scheduling. So as a byproduct of us going remote, we're actually able to scale out our training program even better and across the entire organization rather than just in the SOC. So, you know, if a sales guy wants to go get the same training a SOC analyst gets, they jump into our CBT and do that just as well. So it really enabled us to do more with that, which I thought was great, and just speaks volume to our training team and how they approached all this, which is awesome. So, you know, depending upon the aptitude and the level of hire, you know, if it's an entry level analyst, we're looking anywhere between 3 and 6 months, depending upon, you know, how much they can consume and understand. But they could start working more controlled incidents, things that we have, you know, better understanding of outcomes, what they should be looking at, more specific in probably about 90 days. But that could span up to, you know, continuous training 6 months as they start growing into that role. And ideally, you know, by around the 18 month mark, they're ready for that next level. They're starting to push it, because that's one thing I love about being in a service provider like AlertLogic, like Rook, is that we were able to see such a breadth of problems. It's not just an individual company's problem. It's to the point earlier, is like, how's retail solving for this? What types of attacks are they seeing? How is, how are the banking industries looking? What's their approach to solving these kind of problems? What problems are they facing? And each of them are different types of attacks, different types of problems, scalability, are they cloud, on-prem, are they hybrid? How are they solving for that? What's their migration look like? There's just so many variabilities, which makes it really cool to be able to pull from these different industries to see more of a holistic solution there. So,
it sounds like, you know, if you had a healthcare background or even a retail management background, then some of that experience would be relevant, right? As you go into cybersecurity, you kind of, you know, draw from your previous experience in industries that you're supporting now, right?
Yeah, I would argue that any experience that you have can be valuable going in any industry. But yeah, to your point, like if you come from that background, you probably have a certain understanding of how that operates, and process, securing business processes is part of the game. How do we allow, security should never be a hindrance. And that's a tough thing to accomplish. Big passwords, two-factor authentication. Everybody hates security because it's so complicated. Security shouldn't be prohibiting the business from making money. It should be enabling the business to make money in a secure way. So it shouldn't be the no, just no, no, no. It should be, okay, how do we get to yes in a way that's efficient and secure? And we have to balance that. It's a risk. You're not going to have 100% secure process. Right? We have people at either ends of that process. So typically there's breaking points. But how can you apply controls without also breaking the business process? So it's, the background there is applicable, and wherever else you can draw from experience wise goes a long way.
Yeah, because I know we have a lot of career changers. I don't know if you know a lot about Purdue Global, but the majority of our students are in their mid-30s, or the average student age is in their mid-30s. So a lot of people have had previous careers and previous experience. Military is also obviously, easily translatable. But some people are just switching, from medical or from, some other kind of retail or business, background. So I just try to emphasize that every experience is a good experience. Like you said, it's going to relate back to cybersecurity in some way. So it's not like it's a waste of, time that you've spent learning those new skills or those other skills or having those different careers. That's all going to apply, believe it or not. And if it doesn't seem like a direct path, it really does. And I think the more mature students that we have that kind of depth of experience in life that, kind of serves them well once they get into a cyber role. Because as you mentioned, and as everybody always says, security is everybody's job, right? It's not just the cybersecurity people that have to know about security. And the more you've learned throughout your life in a business perspective, I think that serves everybody well.
Yeah. I was having a conversation about a month or so ago with another veteran, and he was talking about three things that come out of military. I think they come out of anywhere. Things that you've learned that you'll never use again, and you can throw it away, like not walking on the grass in the military. You can throw that away. You can forget about that. It's okay to walk on grass if, for those that are military and are still struggling, you can do it. Nobody will yell at you. Then there's things that are directly applicable, like leadership, for example, how you lead and how you apply your work ethic. Those things are directly applicable. And then there's things that are indirectly applicable, like I mentioned before, between securing a forward operating base or a battle position versus securing a computer network. They tie in together, but they're not direct. You need to connect the dots. But once you get there, man, it opens everything up because you can reapply those skills that you've learned. They're not wasted. You can bring them to direct value. And it's about finding that translation in wherever background that you come from is, how can I take what I've learned and apply it here in this setting? Maybe you can't, but maybe you can, and that puts you, leaps and bounds ahead of where you would have been.
So, and I mean, that would probably demonstrate the critical thinking that you're asking for to begin with, is how do I translate my previous experience in a non-IT function to this job, and how do my skills that I achieved in that industry, apply to this job? And that's, because it always does. It's just a matter of them being able to think through why it applies and being able to share that in an interview. I think that would be helpful. That's very cool. Okay. And so just in case everybody didn't notice, Dean is the one that brought Tom to us today. So thank you, Dean, for that. I don't know if you had more questions to prompt us with too, Dean, since you know the industry so well as the students. Anyone else with questions? Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Dean. I think this was a fun conversation. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully you'll won't mind if our students connect with you on LinkedIn. That's what we do, for one thing. We encourage students to get out there on LinkedIn. I'm pretty confident that you've probably used the tool, as other companies do, for hiring and searching. So
yep. That's
obviously a good place to be, and I'm sure they'll be all happy to connect with you on LinkedIn. The other thing that happens after this is this gets converted into a podcast. I don't know if I mentioned that up front. But since we have recorded, it will become a podcast. We put it on our cybersecurity website in our internship program. It's one of the functions they provide, is converting them to podcast and keeping our website up to date for us. And then I can share that with you if you want to share it on social media. We can all ping you there. And it's kind of cool to get connected with folks outside of the school and make connections.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was saying, and if anybody knows, yes, it is a black eye. It's from jiu-jitsu, so it wasn't that. I usually joke and say my wife wanted the remote, but I figured I wouldn't make that.
Yeah, you're sitting far enough back that I personally can't. Okay.
Okay. Somebody had mentioned it earlier at work, and I'm like,
yes, okay. It's wow, happy. How fun. That's yes. Fun. So are you? So, are those children into jiu-jitsu, or is that something you practice?
No, I do. I do.
Oh, okay. Jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun for those. If anybody's interested, I suggest go checking it out. It's great awesome. Exercise, really practical. And if you do jiu-jitsu, I wouldn't mind, you know, nerding out with you for a little bit too. So that's all. Awesome. That's all wins there. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, I don't know if it's a good endorsement that you have a black eye from it.
It happens. Yeah.
I'm sure the athletes in the room won't be afraid by that. Or
that's right. That's that. Right.
I'm not one of those. But that's cool. That's cool. Very cool. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your time tonight. It was a nice conversation for sure. And like I said, we'll go ahead and publish this for folks that either came in late or weren't able to attend tonight. We get a wide variety of attendance. You know, I invite thousands of people and, you know, we get who we get depending on the day of the week and the night that it is. So I really appreciate you coming and everyone else as well. And thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was nice meeting you and talking with you.
All right. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you so much. Bye, guys.